Welcome to Mini Culture, the podcast where we explore the people, stories, and cultural phenomena that make Minnesota, well, Minnesota. I'm your host, John Gibbertatios. Minnesota was the first state to take big tobacco to trial in the 1990s. And Minnesota was also the first state to take the vaping company Juul to trial in 2023. Some of the same people worked on both cases 25 years apart. KFAI's Michelle Brooks spoke with some of these folks about the impact of Minnesota's tobacco litigation.
This is a top secret tobacco document. That was really fun for us when we first got started.
This is James Monsees, the co-founder of Juul Labs, speaking at a sold-out 2016 event in San Francisco called High by Design. He's explaining how he invented a totally new e-cigarette. Back in 2004, James and his friend Adam Bowen took smoke breaks at Stanford University and asked each other, why were smart guys like them being so stupid? They felt stigmatized for smoking on campus, and they acknowledged that smoking would shorten their lives. Could they design a better product?
We wanted to learn about as much about vaporization as possible. In fact, at the time, what we really just wanted to learn about was, what are the best technologies, what are the best techniques for eliminating smoking? It turns out tobacco companies have kind of worked on this quite a bit.
They dug through corporate tobacco documents stored in a public archive. This archive was created with the help of the Minnesota Attorney General's Office, which brought the tobacco industry to trial in the 1990s and forced the industry to release millions of internal documents.
That taught us that, in combination with a ton of reading a ton of patents and spending a ton of time with consumers, was that vaporization is awesome.
Juul grew to dominate the vaping market in the late 2010s, and the Minnesota Department of Health sounded an alarm. One out of four 11th graders in Minnesota was vaping in 2019. The department said vaping's popularity among teens had unraveled 15 years of progress in fighting youth smoking.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Keith Ellison, and I'm the Attorney General for the state of Minnesota. And today, I'm announcing with all of us up here that we're using the power of the Minnesota Attorney General's office to bring a lawsuit against Juul Labs on behalf of the state and the people of Minnesota.
Minnesota also sued the parent company for the maker of Marlboro. Again.
In Minnesota, we have a special duty to take on this fight. 20 years ago, the Minnesota Attorney General's office led the nation in taking on big tobacco.
Yes, according to this survey, more doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarette.
Come to Marlboro Country.
Do you like the way I smoke? You know, graceful, dramatic.
Darling girl, it's not how you smoke, it's what you smoke.
Smoke, smoke, smoke that cigarette. Puff, 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 and if you smoke yourself to death.
Tell St. Peter at the Golden Gate that you hate to make him wait, but you just gotta have another cigarette.
By the mid-90s, there had been about 300 cases filed against the tobacco industry, according to former Assistant Attorney General Doug Blanke. The industry won every time, and no one had ever collected a dime.
Yes or no? Do you believe nicotine is not addictive?
I believe nicotine is not addictive, yes.
Mr. Johnston.
Congressman, cigarettes and nicotine clearly do not meet the classic definitions of addiction. There is no intoxication.
Right. We'll take that as a no.
This was the posture of major tobacco executives at a congressional hearing recorded by C-SPAN in 1994, the year the state of Minnesota partnered with Blue Cross Blue Shield to file suit.
I believe that nicotine is not addictive.
And I too believe that nicotine is not addictive.
Dr. Campbell, I assume that...
Tara Sutton said she was a, quote, baby lawyer, early in her career at the law firm Robbins Kaplan, where she worked with lawyers including Mike Cerisi and Roberta Walburn to represent the state of Minnesota in the big tobacco case.
Having been in the tobacco wars in the 1990s representing the state of Minnesota, where they fought us tooth and nail every step of the way, all the way through trial, denying that smoking had ever hurt a single person. They denied that smoking caused cancer. They denied that smoking caused emphysema. They denied that smoking was addictive, that nicotine was an addictive product.
Minnesota Attorney General Skip Humphrey's litigation was not popular in other states that were collectively trying to negotiate a settlement. Former Arizona Attorney General Grant Woods spoke to ABC anchor Ted Koppel in 1997.
The attorneys general of this country, by the way, 49 out of 50 of whom disagree with Skip Humphrey on this document situation. Nobody else thinks we should wait to try to resolve this matter.
Humphrey thought Minnesota should hold out for a better deal and try to get a hold of secret tobacco documents. Here's Humphrey speaking to Randy Meyer on Channel 5 Eyewitness News in 1998.
First, we want to make sure that the full truth is out. We want the documents available. Secondly, an ironclad understanding that there will be no marketing to kids. And third, payments commensurate with the harm that have been caused by the violations of law.
Now joining us live, representing the tobacco industry, is Greg Little. He's the senior attorney for Philip Morris, in charge of lawsuits brought by attorneys general.
We all agree that kids should not smoke. This lawsuit is about money, in large part, for legal fees. This lawsuit is about politics. And this lawsuit is about an attempt to use the court system to usher in a new era of prohibition.
The trial was packed with lawyers representing all of the major U.S. cigarette companies, along with British American Tobacco and two industry associations. Philip Morris told the judge they were spending $1 million per week on the defense, according to Doug Blonky. The trial received lots of national attention, although a story about President Clinton and a White House intern that also broke in 1998 thinned out the media room quite a bit. Former Robbins Kaplan attorney Gary Wilson worked on the case with Tara Sutton. They're now married. The legal team worked around the clock to read thousands of tobacco industry documents.
It was amazing, and they fought basically to the death to keep us from getting them. First, they said they were in Europe and in the hands of their subsidiaries, so we couldn't get them. Then they said they were privileged because they had, their research was conducted under the umbrella of their attorneys. So we had to break the attorney-client privilege to get them.
The state of Minnesota set out to prove there was no attorney-client privilege over documents that were part of a crime or fraud. Doug Blonky said the alleged fraud here broke down into several categories: whether cigarettes kill, whether they are addictive, whether they were marketed to kids, whether there was an industry conspiracy, and whether there was destruction of evidence. The fight went up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and Minnesota won access to the documents.
Eventually, they ended up producing over 30 million pages of documents that had never seen the light of day. And those documents dated back to the 1950s, and they documented that along every step of the way, they knew more than actually the Surgeon General knew. They knew more than the scientific community knew. They had been studying the harmful effects of tobacco, but they had hid that information.
Tara Sutton said all of these documents were stored in a Minneapolis warehouse with coated windows so no one could see inside.
There was such paranoia around the information that they produced to us because it had never seen the light of day before. The documents were produced on paper that couldn't be photocopied. If you tried to photocopy it, it would just come up blank.
Dr. Richard Hurt reviewed banker boxes full of documents to prepare for trial. Now retired, he's a former three-pack-a-day smoker who founded the Mayo Clinic's Nicotine Dependence Center in 1988. He served as lead witness for the state. The tobacco company R.J. Reynolds ran a research lab in the late 60s that found emphysema in mice, according to court documents. The court special master determined they abruptly shut down the lab in 1970 because of a gentleman's agreement among U.S. tobacco companies at that time to not conduct in-house research on smoking and health. A 1981 Philip Morris report raised concerns about a decline in teenage smoking, the age that most start to smoke and develop brand loyalty. citing data on 12 to 18-year-olds, the report stated, quote, "Today's teenager is tomorrow's potential regular customer," end quote. Documents explaining how cigarette ingredients increase nicotine absorption in the body were a revelation to the scientific community, according to Dr. Hurt.
Some of the things were just breathtaking, the things that these people knew about this product, knew that it was addictive, knew that it causes disease, but then their public persona was, oh gosh, it's just a matter of choice, not a big deal.
Dr. Hurt was cross-examined by defense attorney David Burnick.
In any case that involves a matter of public health, and I've done a lot of these cases, the difficulty is capturing the state of science.
This is David Burnick, who represented the tobacco company Brown & Williamson.
We recognize that the companies had taken a position on causation that, you know, that was very much against what the public health authorities and frankly, a consensus among many scientists and public health authorities.
At the trial, David Burnick dropped four thick volumes on the floor with a thud. He told the jury that gaps remain in scientific knowledge, according to the book Smoked, The Inside Story of the Minnesota Tobacco Trial by Deborah Caulfield Ryback and David Phelps.
And so when it come down to the four volumes that I plopped on the floor, those four volumes were a systematic summary going back, I think I remember, to the 1950s, of all of the science that was being published about the health effects of tobacco, including addiction. There's nothing new in this trial about what the cigarette companies knew. It was not already published science. There was no concealment of the actual science. The actual science was well recognized, you know, a long, long time ago.
Burnick went on to represent clients including the Sackler family in opioid litigation related to OxyContin. He said most jurors believe companies will put profits over safety, and that's a bias the defense has to overcome.
And therefore, your task is to accept responsibility and, in the process, articulate what the responsibility was that the company actually had given its role in the industry, and how did it fare?
In the final days of the trial, the tobacco companies, including Philip Morris and R.J. Reynolds, felt forced to the bargaining table, according to the book Smoked. They felt the judge was biased against them, and the jury instructions practically guaranteed an appeal. Denying any wrongdoing, the companies agreed to pay a $6.5 billion settlement, disclose internal documents, and change marketing practices.
In the Minnesota tobacco litigation, we didn't shut Philip Morris down, and we didn't shut RJR down, but we did change the way they operate. So, you know, they can't advertise in magazines. They don't have, it used to be when I would drive into Minnesota, when I'd come home from, come back to Minnesota from my home in Iowa where I grew up, there would be these beautiful billboards, Marlboro billboards with the horses and the cowboy. I mean, Minnesota stopped all that. That doesn't happen anymore. So we changed the way they operated in order for them not to reach children like they were. And it basically worked until Juul.
And right now there's a trend that seemingly everyone is getting into, becoming a Republican presidential candidate. Also vaping.
This 2015 segment from The Late Show with Stephen Colbert featured a Juul ad, and it came up at the Minnesota trial. Juul moved to pause its ad campaign the day after the show, according to staff emails.
Yeah, something about inhaling poison steam just makes me want to dance in a way that doesn't require much lung strength. And it's not just ads featuring hip young triangles that appeal to the youths. So do vape flavors like cotton candy, gummy bear, and Skittles.
Juul flavors included mango, cucumber, mint, fruit medley, and creme brulee. Other vape companies offered many more flavors. In Minnesota, surveys showed a rise in high school vaping even before Juul launched. Christina Thill is Commercial Tobacco Control Program Manager for the Minnesota Department of Health.
Youth were drawn to flavors, and the youth market for flavors just exploded. I mean, any type of flavor that you could imagine was on the market.
The department warned school administrators in 2018 that Juul products were easily hidden because they looked like a USB or flash drive. They didn't have much odor, and the aerosol seemed to dissipate quickly. One high school principal in Rochester wrote to Juul in 2018 because he suspended two kids for having Juul and was surprised when they said more than half of juniors and seniors had tried it. Juul staff wrote back and said there was widespread misinformation among youth who thought the product had no nicotine. Juul offered to visit and co-host a meeting with students. They said the company was developing a curriculum as an alternative to suspension. Juul did not end up visiting any schools in Minnesota, according to court documents. Juul's design and colors were inspired by Apple. Here's co-founder James Monsees speaking in 2016.
We wanted to make something that was beautiful and wonderful and sort of with you all the time. And we weren't going to put 10,000 songs in your pocket. But what we could do is put sort of the power of vaporization in your pocket.
Juul's internal email said they wanted to win over the, quote, cool kids. They sent Juul to influencers to generate buzz. Staff said Juul got into singer Katy Perry's hands because they gave it to her stylist. Staff wrote in emails about shipping Juul to prop masters at more than 85 shows like The Walking Dead. Juul commissioned a 2018 social media study that said 48% of the people talking about Juul online were millennials they classified as ages 18 to 34. 44% were younger. Gen Z. The report said nearly half of the people engaging online started with Juul and had never smoked traditional cigarettes. The Minnesota Department of Health said vaping threatened to erase the state's success in lowering youth tobacco use.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of the heart of the allegations in our case, is that after the tobacco settlement, youth smoking rates went from 25 to 30% down to single digits. And then when Juul hit the market, that almost reversed overnight. And when we brought our lawsuit in December of 2019, youth vaping rates were up to the levels they were back in the tobacco litigation. So 25 to 28% of Minnesota kids were vaping.
Working with attorneys, including Munir Megji and June Pineda-Hoidel, the core of the case echoed some of the same charges against the tobacco industry in the 90s, alleging deceptive marketing and targeting of youth. The state also sued Altria, the home of Marlboro and Philip Morris USA, because it paid $12.8 billion for a 35% stake in Juul and helped grow its reach. Juul documents said they used the money to reward shareholders and offer more than $1 billion in compensation to employees, encouraging them to stay at a company in bed with Big Tobacco. The trial brought David Burnick back to Minnesota, now representing Juul. He met a few familiar faces.
Kara Sutton was a very junior member of the tobacco trial team back in the 90s, and now she was the boss.
I sat next to him for almost 4 months in the tobacco trial. He and I, our chairs were next to each other, and then fast forward 25 years, and we're sitting next to each other again. So it was a little deja vu.
But it was clear that this would be a very different case. In his opening statement, David Burnick said cigarettes are the number one cause of preventable disease and death in the United States, and 1 out of 2 smokers will die prematurely. He said people smoke for the nicotine and die from the tar.
It was kind of a otherworldly experience to hear them make those concessions from the outset, because we fought so hard in the 90s to get them to admit that.
This was a new company with a new product that was designed to fight cigarettes. The temperature is different, the materials are different, there's no combustion. And then when you take a look at the actual constituents of the vapor, they're dramatically, dramatically different in chemistry from cigarette smoke.
David Burnick said he enjoys a cigar and he's never tried vaping. For some attorneys, this case was very personal.
I think as a mother of children that were in that age group, I had kids who were in high school during the 2018-19, 2020 time period. I mean, I would see it real hand. I knew what was going on in my house. You know, I could, when I would smell a fruity smell, I would like, okay, you know, you knew vaping was going on. So it was personal, I think, to the attorneys on the team as well, because I think we all had kids that had been targeted by Juul. If you hug your kid and they smell fruity, you should be on the lookout.
On internal Slack messages, staff at Juul joked about posting flavor promotions exclusively on an underage Reddit page, and staff joked about swapping the word teens for fiends. Staff emails also show they work to take down underage posts.
If you want to know what the company's intent is, you can't just go down to a Slack message where people are chatting. You have to take a look at what they did and why they did it.
At trial, David Burnick said the company acknowledged the initial marketing campaign was a mistake, but they were trying to target young adults. Juul made new ads based on customer testimonials that sounded quite different.
My name is Linda. I'll be 74 next week. The last time I had a cigarette, and I knew it was my last cigarette, and I looked at it and I said, this is almost like a divorce. I felt like a sense of loss, but I found Juul.
The book Smoked said that 25 years earlier, David Burnick spoke for 2 hours without looking at his notes, asking the jury, where is the silver bullet? He said no one had unlocked the secret of how smoking causes disease, and no one had unlocked the secret of a safer cigarette. He's saying something different now about his client, Juul.
That was the secret sauce of Juul. Is that Juul figured out, that cracked the code of how to provide a satisfying experience, an addictive experience. We were very plain. This is as addictive as cigarettes. That was the whole idea, is that you give to smokers who are smoking a deadly product and are doing it for the nicotine, for the satisfaction, to give them that satisfaction without the chemistry that kills them, so that they switch.
The amount of nicotine in Juul would normally make a person retch, according to Dr. Hurt. But Juul combined nicotine with an acid to form salt, making it less harsh and easier to inhale. Court documents said Juul was a game changer for the industry because Juul could provide a nicotine hit comparable to a cigarette.
Over time, all of the competitors of Juul and still today have moved to the same kind of chemistry that the Juul product had.
David Burnick cross-examined Dr. Hurt for the second time in the Juul trial. Dr. Hurt said Juul reduced the 7,000 chemicals and 60-plus carcinogens found in cigarette smoke, but it will be decades before we understand the long-term health impacts.
Cigarettes became a product in the early part of the 20th century, took off, and it was 30 or 35 years later that we began to see lung cancer advancing as the prototype of cigarette cause. So it takes a long time because we have to do very large studies in order to figure that out. And it may take even longer for e-cigarettes, because e-cigarettes do not contain all of the chemicals that are contained in cigarette smoke. But maybe 40 or 50 years before we know what the ultimate outcome is going to be. But there certainly are toxic things in e-cigarettes that can cause disease.
Dr. Hurt said we know that nicotine addiction rewires the brain, especially for kids. He said almost all smokers begin before the age of 18, and once you reach age 25, your chance of becoming a smoker is close to zero. Here's Parker Smith, communications planner for the Minnesota Department of Health.
We know that nicotine is highly addictive. We know that for youth, it can have negative implications for memory, learning, attention, even increasing the risk for future addiction, not just to tobacco, but lots of other substances as well.
When one member of the jury got COVID, the other jurors had a chance to leave if they were uncomfortable. All of them said they wanted to stay and finish out the trial. But like the big tobacco case, the Juul case settled before it reached the jury. Terms of the settlement include no models under age 35, no product placement, almost no social media marketing, document disclosure, and a $60.5 million payment to Minnesota. Yay. Here's Tara Sutton speaking at a 2023 press conference after the settlement.
We won because we were telling the truth. And well, here we are, 25 years later, and we have won once again.
Juul stated in a press release that it was pleased to reach a settlement, and the company remained committed to the mission of harm reduction for adult smokers. Altria said a settlement was in the best interest of the company and its shareholders, and Minnesota's claims are without merit. Juul's market share has fallen, according to the Wall Street Journal. Altria divested from Juul in 2023 and bought the vape company Enjoy. Juul was still under FDA review in early 2024. State data indicate the percentage of Minnesota students smoking cigarettes is down to low single digits, and the percentage of kids vaping is nearly cut in half since the peak in 2019. Juul's technology, with battery heat and nicotine salts, is found in vapes like Elf Bar, Loon, and other products that come in more than 15,000 flavors and continue to reach young people, according to the Minnesota Department of Health. Here's Katie Engman, Program Director for the Association for Non-Smokers Minnesota.
They're bombarded by online ads on their phones. I said, do you see these? And they say, no, I'm too old. And again, our young people are all over this. They see ads on TikTok. They see ads on Instagram, etc. It's a lot cheaper and more effective to get right into that person's hand.
Katie Engman worries about new products that hold thousands of puffs.
So our kids are getting so much nicotine, they don't know it. They're holding it in their hands. They don't know what's left. You can't physically see, oh my gosh, I've gone through a whole one of these today. Oh my gosh, I spent a lot of money on that. And the amount of nicotine that young people are getting, and this, I think, even young people say, I had no idea. No wonder I felt so sick.
So what is the lasting impact of Minnesota's litigation? Here's David Burnick.
Cigarette litigation certainly served to vilify an already vilified industry. But the stigmatization ultimately worked, I think, in the 2000s to make smoking, even among youth, to be, you know, what are you doing? And that really has been very important. Smoking is no longer cool. And so I think that is a positive contribution of the cigarette litigation.
Here's Dr. Hurt. Here's Tara Sutton and Gary Wilson.
The tobacco industry continues to transform itself over and over again in order to addict youth. And that's what we saw in the Juul case, and we probably will see in the future. And thankfully, we live in a state where we have an attorney general who believes very strongly in trying to expose that behavior. There's nothing good that can come from kids using tobacco or nicotine, and then it can lead to a lot of bad things in their lives, including adverse health effects.
I mean, it's always good to get the information out, you know, the depositories that are created, and then public health scientists flock to them, and everything gets published in the literature. So it's just good to have transparency about that industry.
The University of California, San Francisco houses the digital archive of big tobacco documents. Now they're uploading Juul documents from Minnesota's trial.
Best of all, folks, there is no reason to worry about vaping because e-cigarettes are so new that their long-term effects are still unknown.
This is Michelle Brook for KFAI.
See, effects unknown. Could be cancer, could be laser vision.
This story was written and produced for Miniculture by Michelle Brook. Special thanks to Minnesota Assistant Attorney General Eric Maloney, UCSF Industry Documents Library Archivist Rachel Takeda, Minnesota Department of Health Tobacco Epidemiologist Sherilyn Helgertz, and the Public Law Center at Mitchell Hamlin School of Law. Music by Kevin McLeod and Blue Dot Sessions. Mini Culture is a production of KFAI Fresh Air Community Radio in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Support for Mini Culture is provided by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. This podcast is edited and executive produced by Julie Sensulo. More episodes are coming soon, so make sure you're subscribed to Mini Culture wherever you get your podcasts. I'm your host, John Gibertatios. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.